rankings from last night. I mean, I'm baffled at this point.
You mean you go undefeated and you drop to four?
And then really, what's the criteria? Let's look at TCU, who jumped ahead of them to number three, and Florida State at four. You know, a week ago, TCU was sitting at five, and you've got Florida State at three, right? And what changed in a week? Well, TCU beat Texas, who is a 6-5 team playing in a weaker Big 12, and Florida State, even though they didn't beat Florida as handily as TCU beat Texas, Florida State still won, beat a 6-4 Florida team, which is playing in a tougher conference in the SEC. So what justifies Florida State to fall back and TCU to jump up? I have no idea. And I think the other thing you got to look at, you know, the way the rankings have just come out, is there's no way they can jump Baylor ahead of TCU, which, again, makes no sense,
right,
considering Baylor beat TCU head-to-head. Because even though Baylor plays Kansas State, who's now number nine this week, no team has jumped up that high up into the polls after beating a team that was ranked behind them. So, unfortunately, Baylor is out. There's no chance they get in, or it wouldn't make any sense for the committee to be able to justify that.
That's what I said. I said there's going to be one team when this is all said and done, if everybody wins this weekend in their conference games, the ones that are playing them, is Baylor is going to be bitching that TCU jumped them after the most important thing, which I still agree, is head-to-head competition, and TCU blew a big fourth-quarter lead and lost that game.
I think when you look at – let's look at the top six teams, right, starting with Alabama and Oregon. Both those teams have three wins versus top 25 opponents. They have good non-conference wins. Then you look at TCU and Florida State. They each have two wins versus top 25 opponents in this ranking. And then you go to Ohio State with one win versus top 25. Now that Big Ten's not looking quite as good. Their quarterback gets hurt. That's something the committee is going to take into account looking forward if they should be in the playoff committee. And then you have Baylor, which still has two wins versus the top 25. So it's unfortunate. You know, you're right. They're going to be the ones that are sitting on the outside looking in. And hopefully the Big 12 will make a change. Hopefully they'll petition the other Power 5 conferences to have a conference championship game, because that's what I really feel like hurts them in the end in this whole process.
Hey, real quickly, because a lot of folks back here aren't real familiar and don't get to see a lot of Pac-12 football. Is Oregon-Arizona a good game or no? You expect that to be tight?
Oh, of course. I mean, Vegas is giving actually Arizona a better odds right now to beat Oregon this game as opposed to the first game, which is a little bit surprising. But, you know, looking at the way they match up, Arizona's defense with Scooby Wright, who's the best defensive player in the country, I think they can actually slow down this Oregon offense. And if there's one weakness on the Oregon team, it's definitely their defense. And Anu Solomon, the quarterback for Arizona, has had a fantastic year. They didn't even know who their starting quarterback was going to be for Rich Rodriguez's team coming into the season. And then all of a sudden, Anu Solomon's kind of become this prolific passer I think is going to be a Heisman Trophy winner in the future for Arizona. He's that good of a player as a freshman. And then Nick Wilson, their running back, has really emerged as the guy to kind of create some balance on that side of the football. So I think Oregon's going to be in a lot of trouble with what Arizona presents, at least on paper, coming into this game.
You know, everybody's, and I know we're making shows out of it now on certain national shows about this college football rankings and the Final Four teams and who has to travel. To me, we're starting to talk about who's got to travel the longest distance is ridiculous. And now I take it, all right, I don't care who's got to travel. If you're one of the four teams, I don't want to hear any excuses. Do you think there's any advantage or disadvantage to anybody that's got to travel after being a college and pro football player yourself?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'll tell you this much. I played in a Sugar Bowl back in 2006, and you know, we ended up having to play against LSU. And to play in New Orleans versus LSU when Baton Rouge isn't too far away, it was like a home game for them. So we really had no idea what we were getting ourselves into. And that's where I think the committee, they look at this top four, the way they've structured it, because now you've got Florida State sitting at four, so they would play Alabama if things stay the same through the rest of the rankings. They would play Alabama in the Sugar Bowl, since
right,
Alabama's the top seed, and that would be the bowl that they would go to. And it'd be a little closer for both those teams as opposed to them being in the three position, having to play Oregon all the way out to Rose Bowl in Pasadena. I think that'd be a tougher game for them. Being how, you know, as much as Oregon travels and how much closer they are to the Rose
right
Bowl, I think that'd be a tougher matchup.
Do Do you think it yeah. So you think it could affect it a little bit then, huh?
Oh, that way? It definitely could affect it. Especially, again, you're talking about Alabama playing the Sugar Bowl, and their fans will travel well.
Oh, yeah. No question. We saw that firsthand down here. Hey, want to ask you something else I know you're familiar with after playing in Cleveland. Johnny Manziel, Brian Hoyer, I wanted to get your take, and a lot of folks are all of a sudden big Johnny Manziel guys thinking they should make the change. Even though Brian Hoyer hadn't looked good, his team's 7-5. What do you do if you're the general manager or head coach?
Well, I think there's a few things you got to take into consideration. The first is, you know, Brian Hoyer is a free agent after this season, so they better know very well what they have in Brian Hoyer before they let him go. You know, Johnny Manziel is going to be under contract for quite some time. They'll have the opportunity to play him and start him next year if they want, and let him continue to sit and learn and grow as a quarterback. I mean, look, Brian Hoyer said it himself. He's 10-5 as a starter. That's an incredible record in the NFL, let alone in Cleveland. I think you look at the progress and what he's been able to accomplish this year, they're still on the hunt. There's no reason to panic. Baltimore lost. Pittsburgh lost. So they're all now sitting at 7-5. Cincinnati's the winner, now has a game and a half lead. But there's no reason to panic at this point in time. Personally, I was watching the game thinking to myself, all right, they're not coming back right now. There's no harm in putting Johnny Manziel in. And even though he drove them down on a nice 80-yard drive, you know, you come back in the second series, and he fumbles a shotgun snap, and it really should have been a sack fumble for a touchdown, and they end up calling incomplete somehow. But it just looked like he's still going to have to go through growing pains. I think if you put him in, he may give you a spark for a game or two, but I just don't think he's technically ready for that spot yet. Even watching the film, the few plays he had, he still has a lot of those spread offense tendencies where if his first read isn't there, he's outside the pocket and running. And you just can't do that in the NFL. Defenses are too good. You have to be able to work through your progressions, and you have to be able to read defenses and make audibles and so forth. And I think Brian Hoyer right now is the better quarterback. He's more mature and ready for that position than Johnny Manziel is.
Hey, something else, Brady, I wanted to ask you, and it just kind of bothers me because I see national shows kind of pushing it, and that's Texans defensive end J.J. Watt, who had another touchdown. He's playing a little offense. He's got good hands. They're trying to push him for this MVP. I got a real problem with that considering some of the numbers that guys on the offensive side of the ball are putting up. What about you? Do you like it? Should he be it or no?
Well, look, I like it as a mix. I mean, we get tired of quarterbacks always winning the MVP award, at least. Maybe I do. Maybe I'm the only person out there. And I think right now you'd have to look at it saying to yourself, Aaron Rodgers is hands down the MVP. But, you know, if you're going to make it an argument, which, again, you pointed out, the media is making this an argument. It's not like J.J. Watt's
– No, he's not doing anything. I got you. No, but you're right.
He's letting the play on his field speak for it. And I'll say this much. You know, Aaron Rodgers isn't going in on defense and making plays on defense as well. J.J. Watt's playing on both sides of the football and having an impact. So there's something to give him credit for that. I think it's pretty neat. Even if he's just in the discussion, I like it as a changeup of just having quarterback talk all year as far as the MVP goes.
All right, that's fair enough because you're right. I enjoyed the hell out of that game, speaking of that Green Bay-New England game. I thought it was just kind of refreshing to watch those guys go back and forth. What'd you think of that game?
Well, I actually think Mike McCarthy and his coaching staff outcoached the great Bill Belichick. You know, you won't hear too many people say that, but, you know, one thing in particular that I thought was pretty interesting was, you know, Darrell Revis plays the number two wide receiver usually in coverage, and then Brandon Browner is matched up with another defensive back versus the number one wide receiver. Well, what they did at one point in the game was they put Randall Cobb in the backfield. And that basically forced a matchup on Rob Ninkovich sometimes with Cobb coming out of the backfield. He had one big 30- or 40-yard gain, a couple catches on that particular drive where they kept Randall Cobb in the backfield. And that was just pure scheme. That's pure coaching and a nice job by the Packers staff really exploiting a weakness in the Patriots' defense. And then beyond that, you know, I was surprised. I think a lot of the big plays that occurred in that game, in particular the Jordy Nelson touchdown on Darrell Revis, was in man-to-man coverage, which you'd think that they'd be prepared for and covered for given how good their cornerbacks are with Revis and Browner. But that was actually ended up being their kind of Achilles heel. Maybe they should have played a little more zone coverage. But it was a fantastic game to watch. I mean, hopefully that, you know, maybe that's going to be the future Super Bowl here coming up in a couple months.
We like to exaggerate stuff in the morning, Brady. I think this week coming up is one of the best weeks we've had in a long, long time in the NFL. They got 7 games with teams between 7 and 9 wins playing each other with wild card and division titles. I know it's still early, but in the last month of the season, my God, this is about as good as we're going to get in a long time.
No, it is, and it's obviously a fun time to be a fan of the NFL. You look at all the parity amongst the teams. No, not many teams are really separating themselves. And even a division like the NFC South that you look at, teams with losing records obviously are still in it to win the division. So it's an exciting thing. I mean, I'm looking forward to this Dolphins-Ravens matchup coming up this week. You know, I think you look at, even though the Dolphins didn't play their best game, they still get by with a win. But to me, it's going to come down to how well the Dolphins' defense can stop the run.
Oh.
Justin Forsett for Baltimore is a 1,000-yard rusher so far this season. And if there's one thing Baltimore is doing well right now, it's running the football. They're not prolific in the passing game. So it's going to start up front in the trenches, and we'll see who kind of gets the better of that matchup.
Hey, can the Dolphins score offensively against the Ravens, who are really good up the middle?
You know, they are really good up the middle. The Ravens' defense is stout against the run, but when you look at them, and as far as pass defense goes, they're one of the worst in the league. So if there's one thing that the Dolphins can exploit, it should be the passing game. And I think, you know, again, you look at the personnel matchup of the Dolphins. I mean, they have all these wide receivers that they can kind of get mismatches on inside and zone coverage on linebackers or really outside. Eventually, there's going to be a mismatch, whether it's with Wallace or Landry or whoever else. But I think there's definitely an opportunity for them to exploit the Baltimore Ravens defense in the passing game.
All right. Hey, Brady, always good talking to you. Thank you so much for coming on this morning.
Thank you, Joe.
All right. Brady Quinn joining us this morning from California.